You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code Locked On, and you get 20% off your next order. The Heat, having lost five straight games, desperately needed a boost, and they got it on Saturday night when Jimmy Butler, 3 weeks since he last played an actual game of basketball, made his return to the floor. And he came through, as he so often has, with a monster performance. 30 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, and every point a necessary one, as the Heat just barely escaped with a 105-104 victory over the visiting Sacramento Kings. Miami led by 11 points midway through the fourth quarter when Bam Adebayo's former teammate at the University of Kentucky, De'Aaron Fox, used his blazing speed to get to the hoop or to set up an incredible display of long-range shooting, and Miami's lead was cut to 2. Then with a minute 44 left in the game, Buddy Hield, who had torched Miami in the first half, then went scoreless in the second half, hit his 6th three-pointer of the game to put Sacramento up by 1. But Jimmy G. Buckets responded with a floater in the lane to put the Heat up 1 with 40 seconds left, and the Heat played some great defense on a stretch with blocks from Duncan Robinson and Adebayo, and the Heat managed to hold on to win it. What a sense of relief. After the game, Bam Adebayo said, "The sun is finally back out. You could kind of just relax a little bit. Food tastes better. Everything's better." 5 games, a long stretch for this particular Heat team, not without valid reason. Just more and more that you think about the kind of impact of losing players like Jimmy Butler, like Avery Bradley, like Goran Dragic and Hero and so on and so forth. So many different players that have sat out since the start of the season, December 22nd, just over a month ago. And for Miami to finally get Butler back, I mean, just incredible. Nowhere else to begin, really, when you're looking at tonight's game, but other than Jimmy's incredible return to the court. He had been on the sidelines earlier in the week in losses to the Nuggets and the Clippers, and he looked like he'd clearly lost some weight. I saw some reports about somewhere between 10 to 15 pounds. That seemed pretty obvious. The Heat had apparently been holding him out in order to ensure his conditioning was at a high level and to avoid risking injury. Jimmy talked after the game about putting in some work here and there with trainers in the area, especially his longtime trainer. But he looked great. His return was announced right before tip-off, and while he looked a little rusty to start the game, eventually he looked perfectly in rhythm. Quick, explosive, showing no apparent signs of exhaustion following his long absence. There was a breath-holding moment there where he took a hard foul. I can't recall exactly who it was. I want to say it was Marvin Bagley. Sent Jimmy flying to the floor, and he was kind of catching his breath there. Eventually, he left the sidelines. I'm not sure why he left the sidelines, whether or not he was in pain or injury, or maybe he just had to go to the bathroom, which is something that happens in the NBA games a lot more than people realize. In any case, he did eventually come back and, of course, had that big play down the stretch, had some great defense, just made things easier for everybody. And no player who spoke to media afterwards could avoid talking about Jimmy and his impact, and he's the leader for Bam. He said, "You know, I got my all-star running teammate back. You know, a guy that makes things easier for everybody." Tyler said the same thing. It's just, it's obvious that when you have a guy like Jimmy on the floor, everything is easier for Miami. And there was just those moments there where he did everything that he has always done since he joined the team last season, getting you those scores, playing big defense, slowing the game down and getting to the free throw line, being able to control the pace of the game, even a Sacramento team that obviously likes to push the ball. Just, he would never let them get out of rhythm. He just always seemed to remain constant, always carry the rest of the team, a word of encouragement. He just seemed like he was, well, he's the leader of this team. He is the emotional barometer. It's incredible to think that after just one season, here he is, so firmly ensconced as a member of this team, as the functional part of what makes this team so great. He drives everything, and it's just incredible to see how his teammates respond to them. I think without Jimmy, they would have folded tonight. Just as the way they have over the last couple of games where they've had leads against the Clippers, even an undermanned Clippers team that was missing their two best players in Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. The Heat still folded, but Jimmy wouldn't let them. And look, I'll talk about the win a little bit more and what it means to play a team like the Sacramento Kings that has historically been recognized as pretty woeful. I still think it's a very positive thing because, well, I'll save that for the third segment because I just want to gush about Jimmy, to be honest with you. A phenomenal performance from him. Just to see him out on the floor, to see him just have this incredible swagger to him. You've probably seen the clip from now. Jimmy Butler was able to get to the line pretty often because that's who Jimmy Butler is. And I guess he was yelling at somebody on the Kings sideline, whether or not it was a Luke Walton or a player. It wasn't quite clear. But he was talking about, I guess, they were going back and forth regarding Jimmy's frequent trips to the line. And he was about to take his 10th free throw. And Jimmy yells over to the sideline, 10. I guess kind of reminding him, yeah, I get to the line and I hit them too. He was 10 of 10 at that point and after he hits that free throw. And it was just unbelievable to see that kind of confidence from a guy who hasn't played in almost a month, 3 weeks. Unbelievable. Even after the game, he said, you know, when asked if he expected to have this kind of a big night tonight with that incredible performance, he said, no, I expected to win. And he always expects to win. He really does. It's that kind of crazy confidence that some might think is, I don't know, misplaced or just atypical, even for an NBA player, that inspires everybody on this team. He was the driving force behind last year's success. He speaks it into an existence in a way that few players in the NBA do. Like, I think everybody wants to feel like they're confident. Even if you look at the contrast between Bam Adebayo and his attempts at becoming more aggressive with his scoring, you know, he still lacks confidence. You could see that. Even after that 41-point explosion against the Nets, followed up by a 26-point game the next time they played, he had some bad games against the Nuggets and Clippers after that, where he looked like he was struggling with a shot and wasn't quite willing to initiate offense and wasn't as aggressive as he said he was going to be. And I think that with Jimmy, that's never been a question. I think Jimmy always can be aggressive. It's just there are moments where he chooses not to be. And that's an incredible difference between two players like that. Like, as much as they're both all-stars, and I think Bam is a phenomenal player on the cusp of absolute and total greatness, Jimmy can just will things into existence in a way that few other players on the NBA can. Like, he can control the tempo of a game. He can speak it into existence. He knows what he wants, and he's good enough to actually make it a reality. It's just there's no separation between what he thinks he wants to do and what he's actually capable of doing. And for Bam, that's still a pretty significant gap. Something I'll talk about a little bit later in the show as well. I'll talk a little bit more about Jimmy's impact and how some of his running mates adjusted with his return here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and more. This episode is brought to you by 1010. Now, you may have read about this in the New York Times, In Style magazine, or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds, responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively at BlueNile.com. And when they're gone, they're gone. We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers, working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds. If you're ready to mark a special commitment or looking for a unique and meaningful way to celebrate Valentine's Day, you're definitely going to want to check this out. Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings is now available exclusively at BlueNile.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast that breaks down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to Locked On Today wherever you get podcasts. Well, before I get to anything else regarding the Heat win, I just want to note that Tyler Herro revealed to us in his post-game press conference via Zoom that someone he lives with texted him at halftime and that person has tested positive for COVID-19. Now, Tyler was cleared to play on Saturday night, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything in terms of future test results. but we could see another outbreak among the roster, so we'll have to monitor if Tyler or anyone else on the roster might have to go into quarantine to follow the league's health and safety protocols. Tyler, as he's revealed, I want to say even after the season, or we didn't know exactly at what point he actually contracted COVID-19, but he had tested positive for COVID early in the hiatus. I want to say like April. The season ended in mid-March, and by April he had already tested positively, and then once he was cleared, returned to working out with a local trainer and made a significant leap, obviously, of which we saw the end result of that in the Orlando bubble. But I'm not sure who it was. He didn't reveal who it was who had tested positive. A roommate, his girlfriend, somebody he lives with. It could have been anybody, and no one needs to know that, and it's prying to even want to know that. But it's just, there are concerns here. And so much of this season has already been derailed by either injury or COVID-related issues, and you wonder whether or not Tyler may have inadvertently made things worse for this team through no fault of his own. I mean, it sounds like I'm putting blame on him, but it's the reality of this season that you can live with somebody that has tested positive for COVID-19, and you might not show any symptoms yourself. And in Tyler's case, he's already contracted it once. Maybe he won't contract it again, although the science indicates that it's entirely possible for you to contract it more than once. No clear answers here. You know, I have never really talked about it on this show, and I wonder how most of you all feel about this, because the vaccination process, clearly a strong debate in our society today, if not for valid reasons, but also just because the lack of availability and who gets it first, and, you know, especially, look, my parents are older. They can't seem to get an appointment for the vaccine, and I know they're incredibly frustrated because they just want to at least try to go back to some normalcy and return to some kind of semblance of a normal life. And so especially, you know, once you get a little older, you start to see, well, if not the end necessarily, you start to see, you know, you lack the same kind of options that you once did. You don't have the luxury of saying, you know what, I'll wait out a couple years, et cetera. It's not that they're, you know, in any kind of immediate death, vicinity of death or anything like that, but, you know, they want to be able to get out of the house, you know, for crying out loud. They're in their 70s, and so it's tough for them, and I see this regarding the league as well. You know, should they get the vaccination before other people do? And I personally don't have a problem with it. I know about the optics, and I'm not the first person to mention this. The optics regarding whether or not they get the vaccine first would probably be bad. But right now, you also have the news from a couple days ago where hundreds of people are lining outside of a warehouse in Seattle in freezing temperatures, because it's Seattle in the middle of January and it's cold. And people are lining up outside to get this vaccine because of refrigeration problem, and the vaccines are going to go bad if not. And we've already heard about hundreds of doses that have gone to waste or been polluted or contaminated by assholes, pardon my French. And so, you know, there's going to be a lot of issues with the rollout of this vaccine. This isn't to debate the politics of it. If a vaccine can help you stay healthy, then take it. I'm not a doctor or a medical expert or anything like that, but I'd like to think that you can do whatever is necessary to remain healthy and to ensure the health of others around you, although that's certainly been put to test over the last year. My wife got the vaccine. She's in healthcare. It was necessary for her to do so. First dose, perfectly fine. The second one was a little shaky. She was sore and not feeling 100% for a day or two, but she bounced back. Everything's fine. No immediate problems there, and she's very lucky. So as far as the NBA, if they should get vaccinated, I absolutely feel they do. They should, because, I mean, we're seeing all these different cases. They don't have the same lives that the rest of us do. We want them to go out there and play and perform for us, but we can't ensure their safety. It doesn't jive for me. You know, they're not going to go in a bubble. They shouldn't have to go in a bubble for a prolonged period of time. You don't go into a bubble. I don't go into a bubble. As much as I've quarantined at home and try to stay at home as often as I can, the reality is that I go out to Publix. I go out to stores. I go out to, you know, the park with my son. Not that, you know, I'm wearing a mask and I'm also trying to avoid people as much as possible, but, you know, we try to live a life outside of our own homes to the greatest of our ability. NBA players don't have that luxury. They can't go everywhere that we can. And they also have to travel and live their life in within a bubble of its own, where they're going from hotel to arena and back to hotel and then back to the next city to continue on this process again. So if we want the NBA season to roll out and to continue to play out the way that we expect it to, let's give them a little extra edge. Let's help them out a little bit so that they stay healthy, so that nobody's life is at risk, so that, you know, guys like Jimmy Butler don't have to lose 10 to 15 pounds just because, I don't know, Adam Silver can't stick to his guns and make a firm decision. I don't want to criticize the league or the teams or anything like that, but I just, if there's a way of ensuring their health, let's do so. As an additional COVID-related addendum, Kendrick Nunn didn't even play on Saturday, and not because of any general struggles with his level of play, which, you know, many thought that might be the issue, but Eric Spoelstra revealed in his presser that Kendrick's test results simply didn't come back in time, and so he had to sit out the game. He was on the sideline, strangely enough, but he didn't play. So on to the game, yet another starting lineup with Tyler, Duncan, Jimmy, Bam, and KZ Okpala, replacing Kelly Olynyk in the starting rotation. Everybody was excited before the game. This is it. This is the Okpala lineup. This is the defensive matchup that we thought was totally going to sway in Miami's favor. Instead, KZ's night was a very short one and unremarkable. 7 minutes, 0 for 2 shooting, 2 quick fouls. So short, in fact, that Olynyk replaced Okpala in the third quarter as the starting lineup, and he never came back to play. I didn't notice anything strange about KZ's night or why Spo had such a quick hook. He wasn't asked about it following the game. But there was one play that stood out where he had what looked like a wide-open shot at the rim before he kicked the ball out to someone on the perimeter. And while that's terrible, everyone on this roster is guilty of that. So I can't believe that's the reason why he didn't play much. I'm not sure if it was the fouls. I'm not sure if it was general defensive issues. There wasn't anything particularly glaring or egregious in his level of play. Again, 7 minutes. I mean, you really have to mess things up pretty badly in order to warrant not getting any additional playing time after that. I didn't see anything. But Spo, quick hook when it comes to Okpala. And look, the man who replaced him, KZ, the man who replaced KZ, Kelly Olynyk, had a mostly good night. You know, he had some rough moments here and there because that's, you know, wouldn't be the Kelly Olynyk experience without it. But he seemed to get out of his shooting funk, going 3 of 8 from 3-point range, finishing with 11 points. He was also making plays for others and was generally pretty solid. So hopefully this is the first game of the bounce back for Kelly Olynyk. You know, we always have those 4 good games from Kelly and then a couple of bad games. We went through the bad ones. Let's see what happens next. Again, was he significantly better than KZ? He was a factor in Miami winning, and he played well. Who's to say whether or not Okpala would have done the same thing? But it just seems more and more apparent that Spo does not feel comfortable going to Okpala for a prolonged amount of time, that he just does not feel comfortable with his effort level or his actual skill set. So it's a conundrum. I'll have to rewatch the game. If anything pops out to any of you guys, please let me know via email or DM or anything like that, because nothing really stood out. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's what it was. It's like, you can get 7 minutes, make him count. But damn, how are you supposed to build any kind of confidence? I've been critical of Okpala before and mostly defended Spoelstra for whatever decisions he's made. But when it comes to that, the kid can't get into any kind of comfortable rhythm or comfort at all if he knows that that hook is going to be there the second he makes a mistake. That's no way to live. If you take a job and you feel like you're going to get fired the first time you make a mistake, how the hell can you get comfortable? I mean, I wouldn't put my pictures up on the desk anytime soon. You know, I'm not going to hang anything up on the cubicle wall. If the second you make a mistake, you're liable to get fired. So I can understand why there's some apprehension from KZ Okpala there. But Duncan Robinson also had a bounce back game for him. So that's been great. He'd been struggling really badly over the last 4 games or so. He had 14 points and 5 of 9 shooting, including 4 3-pointers. The shots look good. I mean, they've always looked good, but they simply fell tonight. Maybe there was a slight bit more of aggression from Robinson. It looked like he was looking for the ball and calling for it and did not need a lot of time to get that shot off. But that's Duncan. I don't know. I didn't see anything in particular to stand out there as far as why those shots fell. He didn't have his feet set differently. He didn't adjust his shooting rhythm or anything like that. He was doing the same thing he had done over the last 4 games, but the shots fell. And you could kind of see, I want to say it was in the second quarter, he hit a shot there, And I think he came to the ball or called for as the shot clock was winding down, and he got the shot down, and you can kind of see him just go through a little transformation there where the swag was back. And then he took another shot like a minute or so later, and he knocked that one down again and as well. And you're just seeing yourself, you know, at least I was. I said, okay, that's it. He's back. And sure enough, he did wind up having a big game. So kudos to him for bouncing back, because he's necessary. Look, and I asked Spo after the game, you know, whether or not he'd said anything in particular to help Duncan get out of this funk. And he said, no, that's silly. You know, Duncan's a great shooter, but he also impacts the game in many other ways. So for those of you wondering whether or not Duncan should get traded or whether or not he's expendable, let's just say Eric Spoelstra doesn't think so. So it's probably not going to happen. One guy who did get some significant playing time at the end of games, Max Strus. He wound up playing a pretty big chunk of time, 13 minutes in total, most of which came at the end of the fourth quarter. Finished 3 of 4, 1 of 2 from three-point range, 7 total points. Had a nice showing overall. A lot of people were surprised because it's Max Strus, a G League player, et cetera, and why he's getting, you know, some significant playing time at the end of a close game in a clutch-type situation. I don't think the minutes were bad. And Spoelstra was asked about it after the game, and he said, look, Max is a guy who's been there, who's comfortable, who he trusts. So I'm not sure what to make of that. I'm not sure if he would have gotten that playing time if Andre Iguodala hadn't gone 0 for 5, or if Gabe Vincent hadn't been struggling as much as he has over the last couple of games, or if Kendrick Nunn had been playing. But either way, Strus got the call, and he did okay. Like, he's had some solid minutes there defensively. I feel like he was impactful. I feel he moved his feet well when it came to switching onto other guys. I mean, he's going to get exposed because he just does not have that kind of quickness, especially going up a guy like De'Aaron Fox. Almost everybody in the league is going to get roasted by that kid. But Strus held his own for the most part as a guard. He stretched the floor, had a nice shot from three-point range. I mean, what more could he ask for in a limited amount of playing time? So I think once the shock wears off as far as, you know, Strus getting big minutes in the fourth quarter, you can go look at his playing time and kind of get to that same conclusion that he wound up playing pretty well and that he might actually be a pretty decent player. Precious Achiuwa also showed real improvement and a nice chemistry with Jimmy as well. I liked the camaraderie. They had a pick-and-roll situation, I think, where Jimmy tossed the lob to Precious, and he flushed it down pretty well. So it was nice to see that, because they haven't really been playing all that much together. I want to say that Bam Adebayo kind of struggled a little bit, and maybe I should save this for the next segment. But to me, although Adebayo had a pretty solid night, 7 of 11 for 18 points, 13 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals and a block, good night, right? I mean, statistically, you read that, and certainly – it looks like he had a very productive evening. But there were also moments there where Bam was a little apprehensive. And this is something I talked about, because after that, you know, 60, whatever it was, 67 points in 2 games against the Nets, everybody was wondering, okay, this is it. This is a superstar leap. He's going to take it. And I said, whoa, pump your brakes a little bit, because Bam's going to have to play alongside Jimmy Butler, and he's going to have to play alongside Tyler Hero, both of whom were out against the Nets. And now they're both back in there today. And you can see that Bam is going to be a little apprehensive. Moreover, there were just moments there where he was not – it's not that he was even apprehensive. He's just that he lacked aggressiveness when he had open shots. And moreover, he also looked a little lost towards the end of the game. He had some bad passes. He had 5 turnovers. Just seemed like he was forcing it a little bit. And I'm not sure if it was – well, trying to figure out how to play alongside Jimmy. I don't know if he felt some kind of pressure or anything like that. Those, you know, he spoke about Jimmy glowingly, as well as he should, after the game. And I think that there's a strong friendship and chemistry there, a partnership, if you will. And so I'm not calling that duo, you know, like they're fighting with one another or anything like that. This isn't a bad marriage all of a sudden. But I did see some moments from Bam where he was not as aggressive as he should have been. And I think a lot of people on Heat Twitter noticed that as well. So to me, it's worth noting, at least over the next game or two, how Bam makes that transition. Does he go back to being somewhat aggressive? And look, that's all we want from Bam, right? We want him to consistently look for his shot, even when Jimmy's out on the floor. You know, I want to talk about whether or not this win means anything. Is it the start of something big for the Heat? I'll debate that here in the next segment on Locked On Heat. Did you know that people are betting millions of dollars on table tennis? I found that fascinating, that $63 million was spent on online betting on table tennis alone in the state of Colorado. And if you're looking for an opportunity to bet yourself, there's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust. That's BetOnline.ag. If you want to sign up today, you'll get a free account at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get a 50% welcome bonus so you can bet on the NBA, on the Super Bowl, on table tennis, or any other sport. It's the only place that has you covered. It's the only network that we trust. And so go to betonline.ag. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Make yourself a little money. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And while you're waiting for those bets to cash in, make sure you enjoy a great tasting protein bar. Perhaps, no, not perhaps. Absolutely the best tasting protein bar ever. That's Built Bar. 18 amazing flavors. You can match, mix and match a whole box of different flavors because there's so many to choose from. You're bound to find several of them that you love because all of them are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You don't even know you're eating a protein bar. Me and my family love them, and I'm sure you will too. They're healthy. They're great for health-conscious people. If you're looking to lose or maintain weight, and you still want to indulge in a delicious treat, then Built Bars are for you because they're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, and great for all sorts of diets. And best of all, if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. Who can beat that? Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskYellowHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show and leave a review. I got to say, I put out some calls for questions following tonight's game. It's Saturday. I did not expect to be inundated with tons of questions about Bam Adebayo or anything like that. But, you know, send those questions in. I haven't had a mailbag in a while because I feel like I ask for questions almost after every game. Maybe I should have a mailbag. Maybe you'll be likely to respond a little bit more. And let me tell you, you can always shoot me an email. You can always send me a DM via Twitter. I have a pretty regular presence on there during games in particular. So feel free to just send me a message whenever you want about any question regarding the Heat, the NBA in general, any player you want to talk about, or if you just want to, you know, talk about anything. I'm open to any conversation with everybody that follows me on Twitter. Anyway, about the game itself. I know that people are somewhat frustrated with this because, one, you lost five games, and all of a sudden now you have this bounce-back game, but it was a one-point win against the quote-unquote Sacramento Kings. Not exactly the encouraging victory that most of you were looking for, and that it took a supreme effort from all-star top 10, top 15 player Jimmy Butler just to get to this point. Well, I think the Kings are a lot better than their record indicates. As I talked about with Matt George, the host of Locked On Kings, in a preview that we did for his show, that's a pretty good team over there. They've got a lot of balance there. They've got some great shooting. We saw that on display from Buddy Hield. They've got a great point guard in De'Aaron Fox, although he's a little unstable or inconsistent perhaps. But Marvin Bagley's had a big season. Harrison Barnes was a player that Matt talked to me about as one of the most consistent threats on this Kings team. He had a bad night, and he wasn't necessarily even a factor. It was Bagley who was just killing Miami from the perimeter, of all things. Rashawn Holmes has been really good. He only had 4 points, but De'Aaron Fox had a big night. Buddy Hield had a big night. Haliburton, the rookie, had a big night as well. He's got a lot of promise. He just looks like a really solid player. So overall, I mean, not only do they have a better record than Miami, I think they're also a pretty good team. They're the Kings. They play with a high pace. You have to kind of catch up to them. You have to figure a way to adjust and match their speed because they're trying to push the ball up as much as possible. I remember Luke Walton talking to me about that when he was with the Lakers, you know, how much he wanted Lonzo Ball to kind of pick the pace up and get that offense initiated early on. And that's who he is. That's the kind of offense he likes to implement, and he's done a pretty solid job of it in Sacramento. But Miami responded. This was, you know, not their typical game, still incorporating Jimmy, and wound up having a pretty good game overall. I thought the Heat would kind of get caught up in Sacramento's pace. That was not the case. They only wound up shooting 77 field goals, below even their league low average as far as field goal attempts per game. So that was somewhat surprising, maybe because they took 26 free throws, or they were looking to shoot more from the perimeter. They only shot 32 free three-pointers. I say only, but only because Sacramento shot 45 three-pointers. So a huge difference there. The Sacramento Kings shot 85 total field goals, so they were a little bit more prolific with their offense. Didn't matter at the end of the day. Miami found a way to win. And my biggest point as far as the Heat is concerned and this victory, the takeaway from this is that it's important. You see around the league all the time that teams can get caught up in losing. You forget how to win. And I know that sounds really simplistic perhaps, or cliche, or maybe even a little vague, but it happens. You get caught up in losing, and then all of a sudden, like, think about the comments from Bam that I made mention earlier. You know, all of a sudden things start to pile up and you're depressed. You're a highly trained athlete. You're conditioned to want to win. You're used to winning because you're so good that at the lower levels, like middle school and high school, you can influence whether or not you win single-handedly because you're just that good. Of course, once you get to college, or certainly in the pros, it doesn't matter how good you are as an individual. Chances are you're going to need somebody else to step up in order to carry your team to a victory. But the point being that when it comes to the five-game loss, losing streak, that kind of gnaws at you. And I think you kind of, again, get into bad habits. It's easy to fall into a funk. They're going through a lot. Not just this team, but like everybody in the NBA is going through a lot. It's hard to stay focused. You have these rampant blowouts happening all the time. It's hard to predict what's going to happen. Players are sitting out because of COVID or injury. And that always, I mean, injuries always happen, but COVID is just another factor now where all of a sudden you think everything's fine. Next thing you know, you're out for 2 to 3 weeks. We saw it with Jimmy. We saw it with Avery Bradley. It's really difficult. Look at Avery Bradley. You know, wants to make an impact, sits out for almost 3 weeks, comes back for one game against Denver on Wednesday of this week, and then gets injured in that game, has to miss the next two. So not an easy thing for guys that, again, are conditioned to want to be on the floor, contribute, be a part of winning. So for them to get this victory, I feel it's kind of like a, you know, refreshing their memory a little bit. Like we just kind of say, oh, yeah, we can win. And a big part of that was because of Jimmy and his overall impact. Like, he's just so inspirational for that team. And I think they draw so much strength from having Jimmy out there to kind of guide them, to be able to slow things down or speed things up if necessary. He is such a constant and such a solid performer that he just, I don't know. He is exactly what this team needs and what they were lacking over the last couple games. I've made mention of it before in a recent podcast when I talked about Bam not necessarily being the kind of leader that Miami needs through no fault of his, because he's a young player. He just started to come into his own as an all-star. And as good as he is on the court, it's a different gear to encourage and inspire others to follow you. I think you need to be a little bit more older and established, at least in the NBA. Because, I mean, these guys are going to follow you. How do you get Andre Iguodala, 36 years old, multiple title winner, who has been through so much with USA Basketball, had his whole impressive resume, and why the hell would he listen to 23-year-old Bam Adebayo? Like, the notions of leadership are kind of vague, and maybe you buy into them or not. It's certainly possible that those things might be overstated. But I think there are moments there when Jimmy steps in there and talks to guys and says, we're going to effing win, and they believe it. I don't know that there are a lot of players in this league that have the kind of cachet where they can say things like that and people buy into it as completely. So, you know, Jimmy, I think anybody who's listened to this podcast for a prolonged period of time knows that I think Jimmy is a pretty special player. That, yes, he is not a perfect player on the floor. Very few are. I mean, you could probably make a case for LeBron James and Kevin Durant, and that's probably pretty it. Jimmy not there, and yet does so many things well and provides such great leadership that he is such a stabilizing force that I feel like everybody on that team responds to that, because he's like Spoelstra in that sense, where like he doesn't lose his shit. He keeps an even keel. He's never out of his element, no matter what's going on. We can still come back and win this. And look, they took a punch from De'Aaron Fox and the Kings late in that fourth quarter, and they found a way to respond anyway. That's what you expect from this team, and I think it's the start of potentially a snowball effect because, you know, if COVID and Tyler's, you know, roommate's diagnosis doesn't impact his team negatively, my hope is that Miami will find a way to kind of remember that they are a very good team, and then slowly but surely they'll be able to incorporate Bradley back and hopefully Gorham returns to action. If that's the case, now all of a sudden this team is much more dangerous because you've seen signs of Bam having next level ability. He just has to tie it all together and be a little bit more consistent with that. Something that I think he's still capable of, and hopefully he'll be able to do regularly, because the performance against the Nets really showcased how good he is. And I think he has that potential to be not that good every time, but much more impactful than he has been earlier and throughout his career up to date. On the Rejecting the Screen podcast feed right now, hosts Adam Stanko and Noah Kozloff are honoring Kobe Bryant's life and career with a two-part special podcast event. You can hear stories you haven't heard anywhere else about Kobe from teammates, opponents, coaches, and journalists. Get both parts by subscribing to the Rejecting the Screen podcast feed after this podcast. Make sure you get your team every day just by asking your smart device to play Locked on Heat. I'm David Ramil, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.